forward this way.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Enlightening the world, one radio show at a time. You're listening to the Angel Radio Network. And now, here's your host.
And hello, everyone. I'm April Reynolds. Thanks so much for listening tonight to the Illuminating Love Radio Show here on the Angel Radio Network, where we hope that we're changing the world by enlightening the world one radio show at a time. And thanks so much for listening. If you're listening live, I so appreciate you taking the time to do that. If this is in the future, thanks so much for downloading this and listening. It's just great to have you listening in, and really respect your time here. And I've got a great guest for you tonight. You're just going to love her just as much as I do. This is a new friend of mine, and I am just so blessed. This area that I moved to very recently in the Myrtle Beach area of South Carolina is just so chock full of wonderful people, and I keep meeting people that feel like I've known them forever, and the karmic connections are so obvious that it's, at this point, I'm 6 months into this, and at this point, I just smile. It's just hilarious sometimes. Just cut right to the chase and go right into friendship and connecting and doing things together. It's just been wonderful. And as many of you know, that I wrote my fifth book, Manifesting Princess, Illuminating Love, Enlightening Your Path to Self-Love, because loving yourself is an inside job. And that's a really long title, so just remember Illuminating Love. But it is the third book in the Manifesting Princess series of books that I've written. The Manifesting Princess is a title that I was given back in 2009, 2010, don't really remember. A lot of things were manifesting in my life, and I became a master in the law of attraction, you know, quote unquote a master, not a work in progress with the law of attraction. And so that handle just sort of stuck, and I, of course, embraced it fully. And I wrote my first book in 2011, and then the second of the Manifesting Princess series in 2012. And now the third one in the series is out on November 12th, 2013. That's 11-12-13. And I did that on purpose because I love numbers. And now I know I love numbers more than I thought I did, because and we are giggling already. Okay, I knew this was going to be a great show. Okay, so I really do love numbers. My friend Stephanie Campione, Stephanina, is the greatest numerologist on the planet, coachingbythenumbers.com, facebook.com/coachingbythenumbers. My friend Stephanina, I love her. She's the reason that I moved to this area. God bless her for that. And all roads seem to lead back to Stephanie, so I have to give it up to her. And just had a lot of fun moving here so far. And so with Illuminating Love, the focus of this book about the tragedies in my life, the deaths of my family members, including my son, it's been gut-wrenching for me to talk about this, and it's been life-changing as well. So my book also talks about divorce, but the real focus is on self-love and how I am in this process, of course, work in progress, of learning to love myself and learning that the greatest relationship that I will ever have is with myself. And I was told that my whole life, but it really took a divorce for me to really pay attention to it. So the serendipity of things happening is just phenomenal. So my wonderful, darling little friend Lisa Starr told me about this fabulous little book called The Dear One Letters, A Path to Growing as a Human and Evolving as a Soul. And it's by Dr. Connie Numbers. And I thought, oh, what a great thing. So I downloaded it to Kindle right away and looked it over. And it's a great book. And then wouldn't you know, somehow, some way, I bumped into Dr. Connie Numbers, the author of this book. And it was just love at first sight, self-love at first sight, and we're off to the races. So she's our guest tonight, and I want to introduce her before it goes too much longer here. And we were just laughing so much before we went live on the air. So I want to do the official introduction because she's got quite the bio here. Dr. Connie Numbers is an author, spiritual teacher, and psychotherapist in the Sunset Beach, Calabash area of North Carolina. She gives psychological and spiritual retreats and workshops as a way of helping people to not only know themselves on a deeper level, but to also be able to remember themselves as a soul. She's the author of The Dear One Letters, A Path to Growing as a Human and Evolving as a Soul. And I also want to read, before I bring her on the air, that on the back of her book, it says that Dr. Connie Numbers has made a lifelong commitment to knowing herself deeply on both a psychological and spiritual level. Her book is a culmination of more than 30 years of analysis and spiritual mentorship. Dr. Numbers has a master's degree in social work and a doctoral degree in psychology. She has a private practice as a psychotherapist in Ocean Isle, North Carolina, and is also a spiritual teacher. She currently resides in Calabash, North Carolina, with her husband, Jeff, her parrot Lily, who we'll ask about later, and her adorable dogs Murphy and Pip. So, Connie, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. Thank you very much. I appreciate that introduction. I got a giggle out of your feeling connected to numbers, not only with your friend Stephania, but that you happen to meet someone whose last name is Numbers. So,
right.
So how cool is that?
Oh, the universe is just hilarious, isn't it? It just cracked me up. I'm like, I always loved numbers, and now I love them more than I thought I did.
That's cute.
And you're so cute. So if everyone goes over to ConnieNumbers.com, you've got that cute little video talking about your delightful book. So tell us about the book. How did this happen? How did this come to be?
Well, the video actually is quite a few years old because I had entered this Next Top Self-Help Author contest, and we had to do a video, and at that time my book had a different title, but it still talks about what the book is about. I've known ever since I was in my late 20s that I was going to write a book. I just didn't know what kind of a book. And I was a professional musician for many years, and I traveled around the United States in a band called Daybreak with my husband, Jeffrey. And so I knew that the book was always on the back burner. It was in me. I didn't know if it was going to be about dreams. I didn't know if it was going to be about therapy. I didn't know if it was going to be about loving the self. I wasn't quite sure what it was going to be, but it kept evolving throughout the years, and I would travel down a path and say, "Oh, this is it. This is the way the book is going to be." And then I got a feeling. It was just like I just had like a stop sign in front of me, and it was like, "No, that's not it. That's not it." Mm-hmm. And so it felt like I retraced my steps, and then when I had more time, started down another path. So I started down quite a few paths until I actually found the right path for me, and that was actually at the beach about 15 years ago, and I was doing an awful lot of journaling, and I would even go away by myself for a week. I used to go to Block Island, which was one of my favorite places in Rhode Island, and just write and write and write and write, and I knew that something was beginning to transform in my writings. I began to feel and hear this beautiful, the most loving voice I've ever heard. And I began to just think, as I was growing as a human and worked so much on myself, that this was just my human voice finally loving me after all of these years. And then as time progressed and I began writing, especially during one week at Block Island, I began to hear this voice say, "Write this down, write it down, write it down." And I knew then that it was something much bigger than me, and I began to write down what I heard. And the first thing that I began to hear was, "Dear one, from the moment you entered this lifetime, you were born all grown up. Housed inside that little body was a magnificent soul, a piece of the Creator, the soul of you, ready to go on your journey throughout life." And that was kind of like the very first paragraph of the book. I mean, that's not exactly quoted exactly, but it's very similar to that. And basically, my soul was introducing myself, itself to me, saying, this is not your imagination. This is who mm-hmm. you really are, and you have taken the time throughout your life to get the cobwebs out, to peel the layers of the onion off, and to finally examine that what's left when you all the stuff comes falling out of the closet, what's left is who you've always been, this tremendous light. And I just began to write what I heard. And sometimes, to be quite honest, it was hard because I have never felt so loved in my life. I did a lot of crying in writing the book. I think I cried my way through the book. You and I were talking before the show started about crying and the value of crying. But when you cry out of feeling such love, that I knew that I was feeling the love of my soul, which to me is God, the creator, the source of all that is. And that was also a big decision that I had to make in writing the book, was what name to call the creator of the universe, of who we are. And my New Age spiritual friends would say to me, you're not going to use the word God, right?
Oh.
And I would say, well, I'm not sure. Well, God is a religious connotation, right? So you don't want to turn off people who have a bad taste in their mouth about the word God. Mm-hmm. But then my religious friends would say to me, you're going to use the word God, right?
Right.
Because, look, aren't we talking about God? You can say the Almighty. You can say the source of all that is. You can use all of these other words. But aren't you really talking about God? So I had to make a real decision because some people would be turned off. Some people would be turned on. And then I just said it doesn't matter. I really like the word God. I grew up with the word God. And I realized that it wasn't the word God that had to change. It's our perception of God that has to change. And it's easier to kind of accept a very loving God in the world, in the universe, when you find that same peace within yourself. Then you really understand and experience just a teeny, teeny, teeny bit about our connection with the Creator, with God. So then I just said to myself, these aren't chapters. You can't write chapters from a soul. I realized that everything that I was writing was meant to be letters written to me from my soul. But I also knew that they were meant for everybody. And the greatest compliment I get from my book is, you know, when I was reading your book, I didn't even think of you. I didn't even think this book was being written for you. It felt like my soul was talking to me, and that's exactly what I wanted. Yay!
Oh, well. Yay, you! That must make you feel so good. And I want to read.
That part makes me feel delicious.
Right. When I posted yesterday that you were going to be on the show, so many people said that they love your book. And so your book is quite popular. Wow. And so
really?
Jennifer Rivers wrote Love, as in she loves your book. And then Catherine Woods wrote, we have this wonderful book at the Red House Specialty Shop. Come in and get a copy and start to know yourself. I don't know where that is. Do you? I don't know where it is.
It's in Shalott. It's the big red barn kind of type house right in the middle of Shalott on Main Street, and it's a wonderful shop, I must say. Lots of wonderful jewelry and
that's
gifts.
In North Carolina.
Great in Shalott, North Carolina.
We'll have to go there sometime together. And then Lisa says, Lisa Starr says, this. She's the one that got me to this book. So she said, this is more than a book. Each day I open the book intuitively and hear my soul's message. I cannot explain the divine connection. I feel like with these loving messages, and she said she can't wait for the show. So, I mean, she was raving about your book. She said she just opens it to any page, and then that's the message for the day.
Yay, Lisa!
Yeah.
No wonder your last name is Star. You're a star.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, star.
Thank you. You know, more and more people are coming to the book, and the book is going out. It's you know, not all books start out with a fast entry into life. This was a birthing of me, this book, and it took 20 years for this birth to happen, so I've been gestating a long time and finally gave birth to this, and I think that it's really starting to take off and is going to reach a lot more people in the next few years, actually. I'm excited about it.
And you know, I know that we have so much to talk about, so I want to get a plug in now. You have a workshop this Saturday. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. I have a workshop this Saturday at the Yoga Room in Myrtle Beach. I think it's 196 Stonebridge Road, and it starts at 10 o'clock and it ends at 4. It's a six-hour workshop, but I guarantee that it will go by very quickly. Like, it'll seem like it's only 2 hours because it's fun. It's called Big You, Little You, and it's about the child within each one of us. And so many people pay lip service to the inner child. You know, they'll say, oh, I read that book by John Bradshaw, The Homecoming, and, oh, yeah, I know that. And yeah, I've got one of those. But most people don't realize how that child is not just a memory or a figment of our imagination or a psychological theory or something you read in a book. The child that I'm going to be talking about this Saturday is a real consciousness, a psychic part of ourselves that has a heart that beats and lungs that breathe. And this child is alive and well, or not, in all of us. And this child doesn't grow up, and it carries the same stuff that we had from our past. And the reason it's important to go back and rescue her and get her out of the past is not because we want to go back and reminisce for reminiscence sake. We don't want to do that. That's just a waste of time. But what happens is people are not aware that if you don't know your past, Freud was wrong about a lot of things, but he was right about this. If you don't know your past, you are going to repeat it. And so all the feelings that we have today, 90% of our worries, our fears, our frustrations, our doubts, our low self-esteem, are not coming from the strong, capable adult part of ourselves. It's coming from the little girl inside or the little boy inside that has not been tended to, that has not been listened to, because we don't really believe that she or he exists. And so that part of us carries all that stuff as a burden and replays it in our present-day life. And that's the reason we have to get her own stage and get her off our adult stage of life so that she's just playing and sleeping and no longer interfering in our relationships, in our work life, in our romantic life, in our friendships, but most of all interfering with how we feel about ourselves. So it's a great workshop. It's filled with fun. It's filled with teddy bears. It's filled with crayons. It's filled with love and education and wisdom and knowledge, and I give a lot of myself in presenting it, and I understand that you're coming, and I thank you so much, because now you'll be able to have a first-hand bird's-eye view when you talk to others about it, because I hope to give this workshop many times. It's just unfortunate that a lot of people think that it's old or that it was trendy in the 60s and 70s, but it has no relevance now, and is just so not true.
It's absolutely not true. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that my book talks about is that, you know, getting in touch with your inner child, that was one of the smartest things I did in the past 3 years since I've been on this journey to, you know, individuating all the way, becoming a real grown-up, I took out a picture of myself when I'm 5 years old and put it on my mirror. And I'd been instructed to do this for, I don't know, 40 years. And I just thought, oh, well, that's for people who really need that. And I never did it until, actually, once I got settled here in my new house in Myrtle Beach, I put it on my mirror. It's still there. And when I start to say, oh, look how fat you are, look how stupid you are, whatever, I stop, because there's no way that I'm going to say such hurtful, hateful things to a five-year-old. that little girl does not deserve that kind of abuse, because that's really what it is. I went through a lot in my childhood, and I did not deserve some of the things that happened to me. It's not that those issues were repeated, the traumas were repeated, because I didn't know better. Now I know better, and I'm learning better. I am still a work in progress, but I feel like I have the tiger by the tail at this point. And one of the other things I wanted to say about your book, when I took the luxury today of spending like 2 hours just sitting there reading your book and drinking it in, and so many times I wanted to reach over and call you and go, oh my God, I can't believe you wrote this fabulous book. This book really spoke to my soul. Many people ask me what my book is about, and I tell them self-love, and I know that your book is a lot about that as well. What I often have told people about my book is I ask the big questions because I don't have the answers. But when I was reading your book, I went, oh my God, here are the answers.
Oh, I love that.
Right.
Oh, you are just so sweet. You just made my night.
No, it's the truth. I was looking, and I'm like, I've been saying this because I finished the book back in August. So there's, you know, how there's all that time before you can release the book, and now in less than 48 hours, the book is being released. And so I'm like, I just ask the questions. That's pretty much my job. I mean, I studied journalism in college. I ask questions. I don't necessarily have the answer. I have some life experience now, so I have an opinion, but I don't have the answers. But you have the answers. Your soul has the answers. You teach us how to do that. I mean, it's so. And the other thing is the love that comes from your book. Oh my gosh, it's palpable.
I'm so glad you said that.
It just dances off the page. The love, it just like gives you a big hug the whole time you're reading it. Love
it. I know. It makes
right?
you feel like you are just the most okay, not just even the most okay person in the world, but that you're actually magnificent, which is very hard for people to tolerate. The thought that they could be a magnificent soul, that they could have divinity inside them. So many times we've been taught that our divinity, that whatever it is we believe in terms of God or Christ consciousness or whatever, is outside of us and that we're lower than. And that is just so the opposite. We were not created to be small. We were created in the likeness and image of, which means we are our own creators. We are these divine, beautiful lights that come into this life in a human body to experience with a divine mind to help us through life, to experience life, to create life, to do so many different things that we want to do as souls, and that we are eternal and we're eternal loving beings. And when you tap into that, and here's the thing, April, people think that you've got to go way deep down inside as far as you can, and that's where the soul is, and I don't have time for that because, after all, you know, it's just too far down there. I can never find it. And it's not. It's in the next breath you take. It's there when you're petting the kitten. It's there when you open the door for somebody who needs help. It's there when you start to say something like, I'm stupid or fat, and you stop yourself and you say, no, that's my human self talking. That's not who I really am. So remembering who you are as a soul is not as difficult as many people think it is, as long as you know how to separate which part of you is being human and which part of you is acting out as beautifully as a soul. It's the same thing, really, as the child and the adult. In the workshop, when you begin to understand that your adult mind has a mindset of its own, and the child has its own mindset, you then are able to discern between the two and go, oh, I'm not so overwhelmed. It's only a part of me that feels this way. Oh, I'm not so overwhelmed anymore. It's just my human self beating myself up. Oh, that's not who I am. I really am this delicious, divine, magnificent being that's loving. And anytime you love anything or anybody, you are experiencing the divine in you.
Yeah, I love how you said in the Oh, sorry. I love how you said in the book that you're you get overwhelmed with love. Like, you're overwhelmed with the amount of love coming towards you. And I felt that in the book. It just literally springs off the page. And I felt so loved as I read that. And then also, I want to say, as a writer to writer, you are a great writer. This is
Wow, now you've really made my week.
Well, it is so well written. This is such a superb book. It's like you're telling the story, and you're funny too. Boy, you are funny. You cracked me up several times. Like the quote about how you're in the therapist's office and you said that you don't have an angry bone in your body about all the crap that happened
in
your life.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
That was in the preface.
Yes. And I just love that. And then you talk about. So one of the first. This is the first book in the longest time. I don't remember. I think it was Simple Abundance by Sarah Bombronic that was the last, back in the 90s. It was the last time I stopped reading a book and got up and got a notebook and a pen. That today I did that. I stopped what I was doing, got out of my comfortable recliner, and went and got a paper and pen so I could come back and take notes while I'm reading your book. Because it was nonstop. There were so many things that I had to write down. Like you were talking in section one, my sense of self was actually, I think this was in your personal preface. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. My sense of self was dependent upon whoever loved me at the time. Oh, my gosh, Connie.
Yeah.
I think I did write a book about that. That's in my books. That's what it's been like, okay, I was like an emotional chameleon, depending on who I was with, because I had no sense of self. Help me. You're so good. And you wrote it all down. It's in your book. And then, I think it's section six, it's don't let anyone treat you less than you treat yourself. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh, we could talk forever just about section six, because that's the whole self-love part, and that's where you and I really want to get together, and we want to do some things about self-love, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yes, we want to do something about, it's so important. And I love the way the whole first part of the book is really about the continuum of the soul, and some people find that just absolutely fascinating because they've never thought of who we are as a soul and our progression and how we get here and the decisions we make before we come to this life. Because sometimes people have a hard time just believing in their heads. Intellectually, they might think that they're eternal, but they don't really give it much thought. It's like when I do book signings. And I say to people, how many people believe that you have a soul? And 99% of the people raise their hands. And then I say, and how many people believe that your soul can communicate with you? And about 25% raise their hands. So I say to the other 75%, well, if you have a soul and you know that it's you or that you have it inside you, what good is it? What's its purpose? What does it do? And I get the same exact answer, and that is they shake their heads and they say, I don't know, because I've never really thought about it. And so the whole first section is like, guess what? You want to think about it? You can think about it, but read this first section, because it's all about, I love the one that's called, the letter that's called Amnesia is Part of the Plan. Like, how come we get all ready to come here, and now we got to forget?
Yeah,
but
how come?
It's all in there. And the second section is all about life. And the third one is all about ridding ourselves or diminishing fear in our life, which leads us, of course, to that section on loving the self. And then, of course, into the spiritual part as well. So I am ecstatic and thrilled that you are loving the book so much, because you are getting the essence of it, which is why I say I've cried my way through the book. When you're writing something that is so loving that I've never felt that loved before, and believe me, I know how to love me. I mean, I have worked 40 years on myself, so I know how to love me. But this kind of love that I'm feeling is very different.
It really is. It feels profoundly different. And I want to talk about that some more when we get back from a commercial. We're going to take a very brief 2-minute commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Bye.
Hi, everyone. It's April Reynolds. You know, I wrote a new book. It's called Illuminating Love, Enlightening Your Path to Self-Love. It's my third book in the Manifesting Princess series of books that I've written. And, you know, I put together 12 leading experts and authors who are all super excited to share their very valuable gifts with you when you buy my book, Illuminating Love, on Amazon. So all you need to do to get over $1,000 in free gifts is to buy one $7.95 copy of my book on Amazon.com. How's that for a win-win celebration? You buy one book at $7.95 and you get $1,000 in worth of bonus gifts in amazing information from great authors and experts. So go to illuminatinglove.com on November 12th and buy my book, and then you'll be able to collect your bonus gifts immediately. My book talks a lot about lessons that I'm still a work in progress, but I've learned how I can work on things like overcoming self-loathing, feelings of unimportance, finding your true worth. Through trial and error and throughout my life, I share my compelling stories that provoke us to think about how we're living our lives. My book is chock full of really relatable anecdotes that, although they're very painful, they will illustrate for you how growing up can rob us of our self-image, and more importantly, this book can show us the way back to high self-regard. So go to illuminatinglove.com today and get your copy of Illuminating Love, Enlightening Your Path to Self-Love by April Reynolds. Thanks so much. Are you looking for a platform to share your positive message? Perhaps you're a light worker or earth angel wanting to share your message of hope and inspiration. Hi, I'm April Reynolds, the president and founder of the Angel Radio Network, and you can have your own internet radio show here on the Angel Radio Network. Training is provided. Contact me today at info@angelradionetwork.com, where we're changing the world by enlightening the world one radio show at a time. Hi, everyone. It's April Reynolds. I just want to give you the lineup here on the Angel Radio Network. Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time is Illuminating Love with yours truly. And Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern is Kathy Andrews with Wings on the Ground. Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern is Prasad Healing with Anaswara and Sherry. And Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern is Romance Your Soul with Susan D'Amico. Join us Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern with Inspirations with Lisa Starr, and right here on the Angel Radio Network, where we're enlightening the world one radio show at a time. And welcome back, everyone. I'm April Reynolds. Thanks so much for listening to the Illuminating Love Radio Show here on the Angel Radio Network. And we're with Dr. Connie Numbers, who wrote the most fantastic Dear One letters. I am so happy to have her here. Connie, thank you so much. We've got so much more to talk about. We only have a half an hour left. So let's talk about how loving the self is not an easy task. How do we learn to love ourselves when we just have so much self-loathing?
Oh, well, let's see. Do you have about a year just to talk about this?
Right.
How about let's talk about how loving the self is an easy task if you practice.
Okay. Deal.
Because it's all about practice. Everything's about practice, whether it's playing the piano, whether it's being in a relationship and building trust, whether it's how to be a good typist. It doesn't matter. The things that we succeed in life, we have to practice. Even if you have a gift, I happen to have been very fortunate to have had two parents who were very musical. Plus, I believe that I came into this life with the gift of music long before I had my parents and I had their biological DNA of music. So that was just like icing on the cake. So when I open up my mouth and sing, I feel so loved and so great because I have this gift. But I would not have been able to have been successful in my musical career or as a pianist or even a French horn player if I hadn't practiced. You can have a gift, but if you're not practicing it, you can't reach a level of success in anything. So I like to try to help people practice loving themselves. And in order to practice loving yourself, you have to have better feeling thoughts. You have to start thinking in a more positive way. You have to start, I mean, we could, you know, I could go through a litany of things, but they're just going to be a list of, well, you can do this, 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 and this. And it's probably, whoever's listening, it's not going to be so helpful. If we could take an example, or if you had a question or an example of something that might come up that you might be thinking of, then I could work with that. Did you have anything in mind?
Well, for example, weight. I mean, you know, I gained a lot of weight during my time after my son died and then through a series of other tragedies in my family. And it's really hard to get weight off once you hit middle age. So how do I stop that self-loathing when I look in the mirror? I don't speak the words anymore, but that feeling is still there.
And the feeling is what?
Just, oh my gosh, how can I ever be accepted at this weight? And I know people are thinking, oh my gosh, when's she ever going to take that weight off? Or, you know,
okay, so
the other day.
Okay, so let's stop right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's stop right there. First of all, the first thing I would say is you don't know what other people are thinking.
No,
so when you say, because a lot of people say that, oh, people must be thinking this when they look at me, they must be thinking that. They could be looking at you and not even thinking anything because they're too narcissistic and self-centered themselves. So the last thing they're thinking is about you. So
that's
one
right.
of the things, because I happen to be a little fluffy myself. So one of the things that you see, you notice how I didn't say overweight?
Yes, because
I said
it's
fluffy.
Overweight. Yeah, I don't like that term either.
Fluffy is just like endearing. My teddy bear is fluffy. I have two teddy bears, Pookie and Charlie Underpants.
Nice.
And Pookie and Charlie Underpants from my inner child, but they are so fluffy, and I feel so endearing to them. They're not skinny teddy bears. So
good.
The reason I say this is because when I look at myself in the mirror, and I look and I sometimes say, hi, Fluffy, I am not feeling 1 ounce of self-loathing for myself. Mm. Now, one of the reasons is because one of the things I say to myself is after I get my makeup on and I get ready to go to work, I actually turn back and I look at the mirror and I say to myself, you know something? You're just too cute to go to work today.
Oh, my gosh.
And when I'm playing golf and I hit a bad shot, I say, you know something? You're just too cute to play golf today. And whenever something comes up, I just say, you know something? Are just too cute to do this today. But you're going to do it. You're going to go to work anyway. Now, what that does is it breaks the cycle of darkness because you're adding light. You're adding humor. You look at yourself and you say, and you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, okay, so I'm fluffy. And then I say the next two beautiful words. They're magic words. They're wonderful words. If people would use these two words more in life, they would get better. And that is, so what?
I know. So what?
So what?
So
and
what?
Now, here's the but. Then I start going through a litany of everything that I really love about myself.
Mm.
And I say all of these things. I just don't say, you know, something. You're a kind person. You're non-judgmental. You are cute. You're fluffy and you're still cute. But I say this. What's going right with your body? Because we are so intent on finding what's wrong with our body. And all of a sudden, I go through this gratitude of, I start thanking my liver. I start thanking my eyes. I am so grateful for being able to smell and taste. I have a beloved friend who can no longer taste. And I don't know how he does it. But he still makes it through and says to me, well, there's worse things that could have happened to me.
Right.
For me, To not be able to taste, oh, my God. So because of him, I'm able to have a greater appreciation of what food tastes like and being able to taste. I touch my skin and I say, you know something? I am so grateful for my skin. And I even look at my butt and I say, I am so grateful that you can sit in your psychotherapy practice for 8 to 9 hours a day and you can tolerate it. And thank you so much for having that extra padding so that I can do my work.
That's really true, because yeah, that extra padding, every woman in America is always complaining about her butt.
I'm thanking my heart. I'm thanking my legs for being able to stand, my feet. I'm realizing as I'm blessing and thanking all of these parts of myself that I am not the scale. My self-esteem and my worth can't get any better than it was the day I was created. So I can't possibly be any more worthy than I already am. So when I get on that scale, if that scale is going to be the barometer for how I feel about myself, and believe me, for many women it is, and for men too, but I think especially for women in our society, then I'm in trouble. Because I'm depending on something that just has a little dinghy that goes back and forth that's got numbers in it that's going to determine how I feel about myself, and I refuse to let that happen.
Oh,
so that I can be who I am. I can be fluffy. I can be kind. I can be loving. But I can also be healthy, and I can be thankful for all that I have that's going on. I have a choice. Am I going to choose fear, which is low self-esteem and beratement of the self, or am I going to choose love, which is I'm going to love myself anyway. Now, when I used to be what I call cuter and thinner, you know, I depended on that part of me to not just get attention, but for my self-worth. And one of the great things, I don't think I've ever said this before, especially on the air, but one of the great things that I have really learned and loved about myself in being fluffy is that I have totally come to an acceptance that I love myself anyway, that my worthiness, my value, my importance in life is not due to what something says on a scale or how I look in this piece of clothing or not. And what matters is my countenance. What matters is what comes through my eyes and my smile. What matters is how loving I am. What matters is that when I see someone, I bless them, whether it's a stranger or not. What matters is that I don't judge any other person on this life because they're doing the best they can. They're going through whatever they're going through. We're all, like you said, a work of art in progress. And those are the things I love so much about myself, that the body, as much as I know I need to take better care of it and I need to exercise more, and I will promise myself and I will do that, I still am grateful for it. I say thank you so much for being the vehicle that I'm traveling in life. Thank you for being that. But what people really notice, I think, more about me and probably about you is your countenance, because I find that when I go through a store, when I'm feeling just soulful, when I'm feeling so good about myself, I notice that people turn around and look at me a lot, and they just smile. Mm-hmm. And I smile back. And the reason they do is because they know they can. I'm receptive to them, and I smile, and they smile back. They're not saying she's really fluffy or, man, she's 50 pounds overweight. They are not. I can just tell it by their vibes. They're, you know, something. I went to this place the other day, and I forget exactly where I was, and this young man, I think he was like maybe 18 or so, and he had Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. But he came up to me and he said, "You're really pretty." I said, "Oh, so much."
Right.
He doesn't have that stigma. And so he saw my beauty. And you know something? It doesn't matter, even if he didn't. What matters is that you need to see your beauty. And I say by you, not just you, all of us need to see how beautiful we are and how lucky we are to be in this, fortunate that we've chosen to be in this lifetime in the bodies that we have. So if we can stop focusing on what's wrong with us and start focusing more on what's right with us, and
yes.
we practice that, practice, 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 you
yes.
get better at it, so that one day when you look at yourself and you say, oh, you're fat, you're stupid, you go, oh, I hated that, that felt horrible. After
yeah.
I've been so good to myself for the last 2 weeks, oh, God, it's like eating a piece of bad meat or something. It's like, oh, God, I don't like that.
Right.
And then you say, oh, this must be really working because
yeah.
I don't like beating myself up anymore. It doesn't feel good.
I agree.
Yeah,
I
that was
agree
a long
that.
Answer to
yeah, I know. No, I love it. I'm drinking it all in. I love that.
Are you drinking again?
I'm drinking again. I'm drinking in everything you say because I'm just like, I'm so lucky that you're my friend. I'm like, I can't wait to have lunch with you, and just I'm so glad you live nearby me. But, oh, now I've lost my train. You were, quote, minute. That's what I was sitting here thinking, and I know I mentioned that to you before. I'm like writing everything down that you say. I can't keep up, but it's like, oh, my gosh, there's going to be another book soon. But I did want to touch briefly on soulmates. This is something that I'm trying to attract into my life, of course, is my soulmate.
Yes.
I was married for a very long time and got divorced less than a year ago, and we parted as friends. We actually was a very amicable divorce. We really spent a lot of time together, you know, making sure that each one was ready to go into the next stage of our lives and before we went our separate ways. It was really a mutual parting, and I bless him and wish him happiness. And I was interested about this. You say, let me just quote your book here. It says, no soul comes here to live a life of unhappiness. More often than not, souls come into this lifetime to learn that it is needed to be able to move on to the next stage of their lives and erase the karma between them. Even soulmates can come together during a lifetime to learn and grow and can eventually leave each other for the good of all involved. And then you mentioned that it is an act of love to leave the relationship if you need to. If in other words, if it's not in everyone's best interest to stay together. And that's the way it was with my ex-husband. So I felt that it was an act of love, and I actually talk about this in length in my new book because I felt like it was so important to share that piece of me. It is very private, but I can't really grow any further if I don't share this with others because they're with me along the journey. So obviously, you had got this message as well, and I really resonated with this. Tell me about, you know, if you have had your soulmate and then you've had to part ways, like in my situation, is there another soulmate?
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. People may not like hearing this because there's such a romanticized version
mm-hmm.
of a soulmate. But guess mm-hmm. what? We're all soulmates.
Yes.
We're all soulmates. We are all one. So we are all soul mates. So there are many people in life that you can fall in love with and be happy. There's not just one person that's, okay, this has got to be the one. There's just one soul mate. It's not like the swans who kind of like mate for life and they never, and when the other one dies, there's just never anyone else that's for that particular swan. We're
mm-hmm.
not like that. We are beings of love. So finding someone in your life, you have to feel, in order to have someone in your life, you have to desire to have someone in your life. So
mm-hmm.
if you want to have someone in your life and you desire to have somebody in your life, number one, you're going to have to stop beating yourself up because you're not going to underneath it, you meaning everybody,
mm-hmm.
feel deserving. You see, you have to feel, first of all, that you're deserving of having someone in your life. So
mm-hmm.
that's where self-love comes in, because
mm-hmm.
you're only going to be able to tolerate someone as much as you're able to tolerate you.
Right.
So on your health-o-meter, so to speak, on your love-meter, if you're loving yourself 40
mm.
on a scale of 1 to 10, if you're loving yourself at a level 4, you will not be able to tolerate a level 5 person. You'll be able to tolerate a level 4 person. And
uh-huh.
then probably as you grow to a level 5 and to a level 6, you don't know if that person's going to grow to a level 5 or a level 6.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the more you love you. If people could have a love relationship with themselves first,
mm-hmm.
the person who's going to come into their life will automatically be attracted to that energy. If your energy that you're sending out is saying, I'm really a good person, but I'm really not good enough, then you're going to attract somebody who's a good person, but really not good enough.
Mm.
That person's not going
love
to feel
that.
Good enough about themselves, nor is that person going to feel good enough about you.
Mm-hmm.
Because how we feel about others is a direct correlation between how we feel about ourselves. So
absolutely.
If you want to attract someone, of anyone that you've ever wanted, and you really want to be loved, you have to be willing to put that investment and practice doing that with yourself. And the more you're able
mm-hmm.
to do that, the more you will automatically attract that vibration to another person who has the similar vibration.
Mm. I love that. And I, you know, we do teach people how to treat us. And just like you said in your book, you know, don't let anyone treat you less than you treat yourself. It really does come down to self-respect and how much you respect yourself and keep those boundaries where they belong. And then I guess all of it will fall into place. I did not know that until I got to be, you know, of a certain age. It took me a while to figure some of these things out, I guess, because of some of the trauma in my lifetime. And I just now kind of, you know, figuring some of these really important things out. And
Can I say something in your defense?
Sure. Please.
Let me say something in your defense. Most people don't ever figure this out. Most people don't give their life this kind of thought. So the fact that you give your life, it doesn't matter if you're 45 or if you're 35 or if you're 50, I'm going to be 65 next month. It doesn't matter when you get there. The fact that you're on this path, the fact that you're willing to face yourself, the fact that you're willing to go inside, the fact that you're willing to share your life with other people, the fact that you're willing to become aware of what it is you're feeling and do something about it is far mm-hmm. greater than most people will ever risk doing in their life. Ever.
Thank you. You know, I think that that's true, and I have always asked the questions. I mean, that's sort of my thing. I do ask the questions that need answers, and then here is cute and sassy, delightful you shows up with the answers. So I love how we complement each other.
Well, you're an Aries, and I'm a Capricorn, so.
Yes,
you
we know, complement,
you ask
and we
the
complement.
Questions, and I'm always going up that mountain seeking the answers, and I will continue to do so until I take my last breath, and then after that happens, I'm still going up, and except
still
I'll
be
doing it in a freer way.
Yes. Well, I can't wait. What time is the workshop on Saturday?
It's at 10 o'clock at the yoga room, and
okay.
it'll be wonderful. The cost is, it was $60. It may go up to $75 for those who have registered late, but maybe not. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the store and say, please let me in for $60,
yeah,
which is a
and
great
I
price.
And I want to tell everybody that it's on Facebook, it's Myrtle Beach Yoga Room or myrtlebeachyogaroom.com and find out if there's some time to get into it. This is on November, is that the 16th? Yes,
yes,
Saturday,
and time,
November
16th. You know, we have more room for people.
Oh, good.
So
I can't wait.
For people to come.
And there's teddy bears and crayons involved. That sounds like fun.
Oh, it's fun. It's educational. It's inspiring. That's to me so important for me to inspire people to actually believe, not from their head anymore, but from their heart, that there is this beautiful, sweet little thing that lies within you. And part of being loving yourself and part of stopping the negative thoughts is actually comforting that child inside. And most of us don't know how to do that. But, you know, children are very resilient, comforted very easily once you
mm-hmm.
comfort them. So the child inside me is really sleeping and playing and having, finally I've given her a happy childhood. And
so once
we
she
all
has, it's never too late to have a
outcome.
Happy childhood. And it's never too late, right, to have a happy childhood.
It never is. We can't change the events. or the happenings or the people or the circumstances or what happened, but we can change the ending. And that's the greatest thing. We can have a happy childhood, and we can have it no matter what age we are. And that's very important. And this workshop isn't just for people. People say, oh, that's for people who've been traumatized, or, oh, that's for people who've got real problems. Mm-hmm. Like nobody else has these issues. Everybody has the issue of the child within. All you have to do is listen to an argument or go on a golf course and listen to how guys talk to themselves on the golf course. You'll see a lot of little boys out there, and you'll see, when you look at arguments, you'll see two children fighting usually instead of two adults. So all of us have this little child to deal with, whether you had a good childhood or whether you had one that wasn't so good. It doesn't matter. You can still learn from it.
Wow. And I'm on Amazon. I see all these 5-star reviews from all these people. Wow, your book is so awesome. So
I hope you write a review too.
I am going to, believe me. The Dear One Letters, A Path to Growing as a Human and Evolving as a Soul by Dr. Connie Numbers. Thank you so much, Connie. Love having you here today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being on the show, and I've loved being here too.
Thank you, and I look forward to seeing you on Saturday at the workshop, and
yes,
I can't
thanks.
Wait to find out what the crayons are for. I love to color. It's lots of fun.
Good.
Well, thank you so much, and I want to encourage everyone to listen to me next Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I'll be here, and then throughout the week we have other shows on the air, and be sure to join us then. So for everyone here on the Illuminating Love Radio Show and the Angel Radio Network, I'm April Reynolds for Dr. Connie Numbers. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.
Good night.
Good night. Here's what's coming up on the Angel Radio Network. Sundays at 8 p.m., join Dr. Connie Numbers for Kicking It Up a Notch in Life, Love, and Spirit. Mondays at 8 p.m., it's Raising Vibrations with Paige Hall Ferraro. Tuesdays at 8 p.m., join us for Wings on the Ground with Kathy Andrews. Wednesdays at 9 p.m., it's For the Love of Spirit with Anaswara and Sherry. Thursdays at 8 p.m., join Marcia Hanson-McCauley for her show, Nurse to Health. And Fridays at 9 p.m., it's Inspirations with Lisa Starr. Find out more by following us on Facebook.com/Angel Radio Network. Also, sign up for our mailing list at angelradionetwork.com or text Angel Radio to 22828 to subscribe from your phone. And if you've been thinking of having your own radio show, contact me today at info@angelradionetwork.com. where we're changing the world by enlightening the world, one radio show at a time.
Blog Talk Radio.
The views and opinions expressed on this show are not intended to provide healthcare advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Views expressed here do not necessarily reflect those of the Angel Radio Network or its staff. Enlightening the world, one radio show at a time. You're listening to the Angel Radio Network. And now, here's Kicking It Up a Notch in Life, Love, and Spirit with Dr. Connie Numbers, author of The Dear One Letters and licensed psychotherapist. And now, here's Dr. Connie.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. You are listening to the Angel Radio Network. I'm Dr. Connie Numbers, and I am the host of Kicking It Up a Notch in Life, Love, and Spirit. It's so good to have you here with me this evening, whether you're listening live or whether you'll be listening later via the archives. And even though it's the Super Bowl tonight, it's also Super Connie Sunday because it's the kickoff of my new radio show. So between the Broncos, the Seahawks, and me, it should be an exciting night any way you look at it. Just know that you are welcomed, and I'm truly excited about the prospect of having you join me on this journey for the months to come, in which we'll explore our life and loves as a human being and our spirituality as a soul. Some of you already know me up close and personal. Others may know me somewhat, and some of you may know of me, but many of you don't know me at all. This is why I feel it's very important that tonight especially, I set the foundation of who I am, where I came from, and how I got here.
Each of us has our own story in life. And if you don't know any of mine, then you're not going to know who you're really listening to or who you're really talking to when you start calling in next week, and also what you're going to be getting from this radio show. So tonight, by telling you some of my story, you'll have much more than just an inkling of what I'm all about. That's why I suggest that you listen to this show in its entirety, not only because I'm going to be setting the stage for things to come, but also because getting to know me and what I'm all about is what you're going to need in order for you to build trust in the relationship we're about to have. And yes, you and I are going to have a relationship, but I will talk about that a little bit later. Also, in the second half of this show, I'm going to be answering one of the great questions that was sent to me a few weeks ago that will definitely benefit anyone who's listening. So stay with me if you can. It's going to be quite an exciting and interesting hour. So let me start by telling you a little bit about myself. Some of who I am is a psychotherapist, and I've been a psychotherapist for 27 years. I really can't believe it's been that long, but it has. I lived in the Hudson Valley in New York State most of my life, but I now reside in Calabash, North Carolina, and I have a private practice close by in Sunset Beach. One of my very favorite stories about being a psychotherapist is the first day I started my private practice in Kingston, New York. I had this little bitty tiny basement studio on Wall Street. And here I was starting a new career at the age of 39, and I had just hung my very first sign on the outside of the building. And it read, Connie Numbers, comma, CSW, which stood for Clinical Social Worker. And underneath my name, it said in big, black, bold, and beautiful letters, Psychotherapist. As I stepped back with pride to admire this sign even further, an older gentleman came walking down the street and stopped and stood right next to me on the sidewalk. He then proceeded to put his hands on his hips and look at the sign and say to himself out loud, Connie Numbers. And then he quickly turned and looked at me and said, Psycho the Rapist? I still laugh thinking of that moment. I mean, really. I had never looked at the word quite like that and never have since. But I have to say that one of the most frequently asked questions of me is, what does a psychotherapist do? Well, obviously that man was clueless. But in fact, I just returned from a week's vacation by myself, and that is the one and only question two people asked me. What is it that you do as a therapist? Well, it's actually not an easy answer, because I could have 50 psychotherapists in a room with me, and each one of us would have our own style and our own niche that defines us. So I can only tell you how I work and what's important for me when exploring the process of this multifaceted arena we call psychotherapy. So if I were to give you the Reader's Digest version of what I do, it would sound something like this. I help people to understand and become more aware of themselves on a deeper level. Since I find most people to be hard on themselves, I give my patients the opportunity to look at themselves from a non-judgmental point of view, so they're not so fearful of letting themselves have all their thoughts and feelings without believing that something's wrong with them. And then when they're able to release their inner critic and see what's right with them, they're now freer to take a look at their life, their relationships, their feelings, and their belief system with a new and different perspective. So I guess in some ways, I give those who come to see me the opportunity to either stay asleep in their old ways or wake up to new ways of thinking, feeling, and reacting. And when this happens, they move forward in their life with a higher regard for themselves and the hope of becoming a much happier person. So in essence, it really doesn't matter what the issue is when someone comes to see me. When I help them, to change the relationship they have with themselves, everything in their life changes for the better. And if they choose to continue this path of what I call doing inner joyful work, the ultimate result is that they become healthier and happier with themselves, with others, and with their life. You see, if there's anything I've learned in my 65 years of living, and believe me, there is much that I have, one lesson that always sticks out for me is that everything in life gets created from the inside out. Life is really an inside job. When you change how you feel about yourself for the better, that inner growth automatically transfers itself to feeling better about others and eventually feeling better about being in the world. So when you free yourself on the inside, life is no longer a burden or something you have to be afraid of. Instead, life becomes an adventure to be savored and played with. I've definitely learned this firsthand because I've spent the majority of my life diving to the depths of who I am in order to know myself on the deepest level I know how. For me, this journey started in my 20s. I remember when I was a music teacher in Red Hook, New York, in the 1970s. I would go into the teacher's room on my breaks, and I'd always be reading the latest self-help bestseller. And I had a pretty good idea that some of the teachers were thinking, good God, what book is she going to come in with next week? Because actually one of my teacher friends told me that. So once I was reading a book called Going Sane. I decided to bring that one in purposely. It was really a great book, and yes, I did get a lot of raised eyebrows with that one. But discovering more about myself was my passion. And when I think back on it, even then, in my 20s, I can see that my life's work has been one of searching for me. My therapist used to say that a child's first serious questions in life are, who am I and where did I come from? I think I've been asking that question my entire life. And so rather than having the desire to travel to far-off places in the outside world, I've spent most of my time taking the inner adventure, traveling to far-off corners of the world within myself. And just to let you know, not only have I survived this undertaking, but it truly has been the most rewarding adventure of my life. Not just because it's brought me a happiness I didn't think existed, but also because I discovered that there was much more to me than I ever thought possible. Never in a million years did I ever think that going deeply within myself would result into me bumping into my soul, which for me is bumping into God. But that's exactly what happened. But as an aside, just for a minute, I'd like to say two things to you, my dear listener, that's important for you to know right off the bat. First of all, I want you to know that my path is no better than yours, nor is it higher or lower than yours, or even more spiritual than yours. All of us are on our own spiritual path, whether we know it or not, whether we believe it or not, and that path comes in all kinds of varieties and flavors. Each of us has our own purpose and our own journey. The inner journey just happens to be my path, which is not any more important than yours. But in sharing my path with you, however, I have the hope that it can help you with yours, whatever that is. And the second thing I want to address right away on this program is the word God. You know, when I was writing my book, The Dear One Letters, and I'll talk about that a little later, I was in a real quandary about using the word God to define this beautiful feeling of light I had within myself. My New Age spiritual friends would say to me, you're not really going to use the word God in your book, right? Well, why not? I said, because there are many people who have a bad taste in their mouth about the word God. To them, it means a religious point of view of God as a person who judges and who believes we're all sinners. And many of them still think that God is a he. So you need to use another word like the source or the source of all creation, or the universe, or a divine energy. But don't use the word God, Connie, because it'll turn a lot of people off, and you want people to buy your book. I'll think about it, is what I really said. But then, when talking with my religious friends about my book, they would say, well, you're going to use the word God in your book, right? So I thought I'd ask, well, why do you think I should? Well, because if you use any other name, it's going to sound weird. And we all know you're really talking about God. So if you use any other word, Connie, it could turn a lot of people off. And you want people to buy your book. So, needless to say, I had to think about this one for a long time. In the end, I decided I would use a few different words for the word God here and there throughout the book, because I thought it was important to do so. But the one name I would use the most often would be the word God. And I did this for one very good reason. Because, well, I happen to like the word God. It's what I'm used to, and it's become a very loving word for me. And I came to the realization that it's not the word God that needs to change, but our version of who God is that needs to change. So please know that I'm not here on this radio show to define who or what God is to you. It doesn't matter if you're religious or spiritual or both or none of the above. All of us have our own definition of who God is and who God isn't. So know that all views of God are acceptable on this show. All I can do is speak from my own personal experience of who and what I think God is for me. And in time, you'll have a clearer idea of that. But for now, let me get on with telling you how I bumped into the most extraordinary part of myself. In other words, how I bumped into God. I like to use the analogy of a closet, not only because it's symbolic of my own journey, but because it also pertains to you. I believe that each one of us has our own emotional closet in life. It's the place where we store all our emotional stuff. And you know something? We've all got issues, which means we've all got stuff. And speaking of stuff, we've stuffed our closet throughout our life with all the thoughts and feelings we really don't want to look at. So when something comes along that disturbs us about ourselves or about someone else, instead of taking a deeper look at those feelings and working through them, and then letting them go, most of the time we just open the closet door and throw them all in. We throw in our guilt, our shame, our depression, our worries, our blame, our judgments, our hurts and angers, our disappointments, and our fears. Oh, yes. All of our fears get pushed into that closet, including our fears of loving fully and deeply. And so this closet has been with us all our life, starting when we were a child. And it doesn't matter if you had a happy childhood or not, because every child has feelings they stuff. And as a child, we had no choice but to stuff this closet with our feelings because we didn't understand what they were or how to control them. We were just too little, so we just had them. Eventually, we could identify the feelings of mad, sad, and glad. But what we didn't know or understand was why the most important people in our life, like our parents, for example, acted a certain way, or why they may have treated us differently than our siblings, or how come they didn't want to listen to us. And as children, our parents are like gods, so it would never occur to us to think that they had their own emotional closet filled with stuff. So as a child, it becomes easy to think that much of what went on in our house was our fault. It just comes with the package of being a little munchkin. So we hide these feelings and stuffed our closet, and many times with feelings of unlovability, because we had the belief that if we were really, really lovable, people wouldn't say mean things to us or ignore us or tell us to be seen and not heard. If we were lovable enough, our parents wouldn't be fighting, the teacher wouldn't have said we were stupid, or the kid next door wouldn't have picked on us. Now, some of us don't remember having these thoughts and feelings consciously because we can't remember back that far. But some of us do remember those feelings, and we think we just outgrew them. But the truth is, All of us have stuffed some feelings in that closet, whether we remember it or not. And the reason I'm talking about this is because it's so important to our emotional and spiritual well-being right now in our present-day life. The thoughts and feelings we had as children haven't gone anywhere just because we've, quote, grown up. They're still stuck in our emotional closet, continuing to be very active in our life, almost always without our awareness. Our little feelings get acted out all the time, especially in our relationships. So if we want what most of us say we want, which is to be happy, successful, and loved, then we have to put some time in exploring the emotional closet that keeps us from having it. And even if you're already happy, successful, and loved, it doesn't mean you're done. There's always another level you can go to that will bring about even more happiness, success, and love. I've learned there's always somewhere new to go in your growth as a human and your evolvement as a soul. So this closet that I'm talking about is very, very powerful within each and every one of us. And most of us have gotten pretty good at protecting ourselves from believing that this closet even exists. But it does exist, my friends. I call it the closet of not good enough. And as they say in horror movies, it's alive. So instead of knowing what's in your wallet, as the TV commercial says, it's much better to know what's in your closet. Because it's then that your life really begins to change for the better. So when I first entered therapy as a 25-year-old, I didn't know I had a closet full of stuff. Didn't even occur to me. I only went into therapy because my older and wiser boyfriend was in therapy at the time, and he basically gave me an ultimatum. He said, look, you either grow with me and learn what I'm learning, or we're probably not going to last. So sometimes you do what you got to do for love. And thank God I did. Because sure enough, I began to see that, yes, indeed, I did have my very own closet. And in time, that closet door swung open, and lots of stuff came tumbling out. And as I began to work on cleaning up this stuff, I realized I now had room to actually walk inside this closet and see what's in there. So I did. And what do you think I saw? Lots of shelves. Lots and lots of shelves filled with all the emotional stuff I had jammed in there for years. And it was this stuff that had caused this closet door to fly open in the first place. So I knew that what had first come spewing out of this closet was just the symptom of what I was experiencing in my life. What was sitting there on those shelves was the cause. So, to make a long story short, I began to take those issues off the shelf one by one and examine them. And eventually, with the help of a good therapist, I began to make incredible changes within myself. And as the years passed, my closet of not good enough became a place of good enough where I could walk around quite freely. And now I had these wonderful empty shelves where I could put new thoughts, new feelings, new reactions, new opinions, new ideas, and new behaviors. Yes, there would always be some deep-seated stuff still lingering on those shelves, but in general, I felt happier, more confident, and much more loving toward myself. It was no longer a closet of me pretending to be someone I wasn't. For the first time in my life, I felt authentic and finally had the freedom to be who I really was and who I wanted to be. And without doubt, I also knew I had the ability to create my life the way I wanted it to be. So to be quite honest, I breathed a huge sigh of relief because I thought I was done. I had this feeling of, yay, I've arrived. Free at last, free at last. And I was done, and I was done, at least at that level. Because I soon learned that just when you arrive at one level, you've got another one waiting, if you so choose. So to continue my analogy of the closet, one day my level of awareness kicked up a notch. It was as if one day I suddenly awoke and saw that way back in this closet, way, way back in the farthest, deepest part of the closet, was a little tiny speck of light a light I had never noticed before, or if I had, I probably ignored it because it looked too far away. But I knew intuitively that if I were to move toward that light, I would be going in a direction I'd never been before. And walking into this unknown territory was not familiar, and therefore it felt a little uncomfortable for me. I remember thinking, well, why should this bother you? After all, you've been walking into psychological unknown territory all your life. What's different now? Well, that was true, but this felt different. I could feel it. And I knew, well, let me put it this way. Have you ever had that feeling when you know something, but you don't know how you know it? You just know it? Like an intuitive knowing that you have? Well, I knew that if I walked toward that light, that somehow my life was going to change. And to be honest, I didn't really know if I wanted that. After all, I was already pretty happy. But I also knew that if I wanted to go to the next level within myself, I would have to walk toward this light. So I did. And as I did, it seemed as if this light kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger until I finally found my way to the deepest part of the closet. And as I stood in this light, I realized that this light was never small at all. It didn't really get bigger and bigger. It was always huge to begin with. I just had to move more of my human stuff out of the way so I could really see it. And there it was, this room full of beautiful, brilliant light filled with unconditional love. And there I was, basking in it. It lasted only a few minutes. But I knew that not only was this light who I really was, it was also who God really is. I was actually feeling and experiencing the presence of God within me. And it was then that I knew without doubt that I was an eternal being having a human experience, and that this light was who I have always been and who I am always going to be. And with that knowing, I came to the realization that this is what I had really been searching for all my life, the remembrance of who I really am, the answer to my very first questions. Who am I? And where did I come from? So now I'm really done, right? Now I've finally arrived. Nope. Not quite. Because 15 years ago, as I was sitting on a beach on Block Island, I was writing in my journal as usual, coming up with all kinds of ideas for the book I knew I was eventually going to write, and I heard the words, "Dear one," those words totally popped into my head from out of the blue, and they had nothing to do with what I was currently writing. So I did what most people would do. I totally ignored them. Now, where was I? I was thinking as I continued to write. And then the words repeated themselves, except this time with instruction. And I heard, "Dear one, don't be afraid. Just write this down. Go ahead. Write down what you hear." Of course, what did I do? I stopped dead in my tracks and put my pen down. Whose voice is this? I thought to myself. Well, it has to be my voice because it's coming from me. I knew it wasn't the voice of my adult self or my inner child or even my ego because I knew those voices like the back of my hand. This voice was different. It sounded like me, but it had a different feeling that came with it. It was soft and gentle and loving, and it was by far the most peaceful voice I've ever heard. So I slowly picked up my pen, and I wrote the words, "Dear one, don't be afraid. Just write this down. Write down what you hear." And as I waited with a thumping heart for the next words to come, I heard this beautiful voice say to me, "Dear one, from the moment you entered this lifetime, you were born all grown up," which is actually the very first words in my book. whoa, 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 I said to myself, because I could feel myself having two very different feelings about this experience. Like, on the one hand, I was feeling tremendous excitement and joy because I knew that this was the voice of my soul talking to me. This spiritual part of me, this light that I had discovered in the back of my closet, now had a voice, and this voice was talking to me. I was talking to me. The God that lives within Connie was talking to the human personality of Connie. Oh, my God. I did not want to believe it. And yet I wanted to believe it with all my heart. So if you think that I heard the angels sing and the heavens open up and I ran joyously and eagerly toward that voice, you are mistaken. Because my other reaction was one of fear. And to this day, I can remember exactly what I was thinking when this happened, because I actually wrote it down. And it was this. What is going to happen if I write down what I hear? If I allow myself to listen to this voice, what's going to happen? What will this mean? What will have to change? And all of a sudden, I felt this burdensome feeling of responsibility, not coming from the voice, but from the fearful part of myself that said, what's going to be expected of me now? What am I supposed to do with this information? Is this what my book's supposed to be about? Am I supposed to write about this? Will this affect my credibility as a therapist if I do? And before I knew it, I found myself in the throes of fear. And then I heard the words, dear one, you are feeling afraid because you just took a huge leap of faith, and that can be scary. But you are blessed, you are safe, and you are in control of your life. You've been asking to hear me for a long time, and now you have. But you can stop if you like. You don't have to do anything. Just know that I'm always here for you. And with those reassuring words, I actually began to cry. I felt loved, so loved. And so I picked up my pen and continued to write. That little scaredy cat in me ran away. Because at that time, nothing felt more right for me at that moment. And I had to hear more. And so as the years have passed, I've continued to listen to the voice of my soul and write down what I hear. It's taken me 15 years, but the end result has been me giving birth to a most beautiful child. And that child is my book called The Dear One Letters, A Path to Growing as a Human and Evolving as a Soul, which is a series of 43 letters written from my divine self to my human self on how to live a spiritual and human life at the same time, and how to remember who you really are. So I imagine it will come as no surprise to you that this psychotherapist, or as some say, psychotherapist, slash author, slash spiritual teacher, and now radio show host, wants to talk with you and share with you all the different ways you can also grow as a human and evolve as a soul. But on that note, we're going to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you why I didn't want to do this radio show and what finally changed my mind.
Hi, everyone. This is April Reynolds, the founder of the Angel Radio Network. Here's what's coming up. Sundays at 8 p.m., join Dr. Connie Numbers for Kicking It Up a Notch in Life, Love, and Spirit. Mondays at 8 p.m., it's Raising Vibrations with Paige Hall Ferraro. Tuesdays at 8 p.m., join us for Wings on the Ground with Kathy Andrews. Wednesdays at 9 p.m., it's For the Love of Spirit with Anaswara and Sherry. Thursdays at 8 p.m., join Marcia Hanson-McCauley for her show, Nurse to Health. And Fridays at 9 p.m., it's Inspirations with Lisa Starr. Find out more by following us on Facebook.com/Angel Radio Network. Also, sign up for our mailing list at angelradionetwork.com or text Angel Radio to 228 888-888-888 to subscribe from your phone. And if you've been thinking of having your own radio show, contact me today at info@angelradionetwork.com, where we're changing the world by enlightening the world one radio show at a time.
Hi, I'm back. This is Dr. Connie Numbers, and you're listening to my radio show, Kicking It Up a Notch in Life, Love, and Spirit on the Angel Radio Network. When I was first approached by April Reynolds, the CEO and owner of this network, to host a radio show, I have to admit that it sounded like way too much work and way too much commitment for me at this time in my life. I mean, after all, it would mean committing myself to every Sunday at 8 o'clock for as long as I felt up to it. And as I started thinking about what I would talk about, what people I would contact for being guests, how many people would actually listen, how much time I would have to invest in this process, I just began to think that maybe this might be too much for me. After all, I'm getting up in age. I don't have the energy I used to. I've already got a pretty full plate, and I'm going to be offering all kinds of programs and promotions on my website very soon. So I had really good reasons not to engage in this endeavor. However, amidst all this chatter in my head, something happened that happens to me quite often. A particular voice pops into my head, and I think you know what voice that is. And I've learned by now that when I hear this voice, I listen to it because it always comes to tell me something important. So as I was coming up with all the reasons not to host a radio show, I hear this loving voice say to me, "Think of this show as a relationship." A relationship, I thought. Yes, a relationship. A relationship. I'd never quite thought of having a radio show as having a relationship. But the more I thought about it in that way, the more I knew it was true. The exchange between radio host and caller, or between radio host and guest, is not just about having conversations. It's about relating to one another. And I realized that this radio show is really about the relationship between you, the listener, and me. Even though we may never speak or ever meet, we are still connected to each other. And the more I started to think in terms of the word relationship, everything began to turn around for me. When I began to think about this show in terms of having a relationship with you, now it felt much more special and more intimate for me, and I really love emotional intimacy, which is why I love being a therapist. So now the radio show was no longer about the logistics or the work involved or the commitment or even my age. All of a sudden, this radio show became about love, because that's what I think of when I think in terms of having a relationship. It became about love for myself, love for you, love for others, and a love for service. And I also knew that having this show would be a way for me to reach more people, which is something I've really been wanting to do. So when I began thinking of this show in terms of having a new relationship in my life, it totally changed my feelings. So literally within minutes I went from, "No, I don't think so," to, "Hey, I'm really excited about this. Yes, I'm going to do it." And I knew that I had just been guided in the direction that would be right for me and right for you. And it was then I also realized that this show was going to be all about relationships, not just the relationships we have with people, but especially the relationship we have with ourselves, with our life, with our loves, and with our spirituality. And, you know, it's funny how this happens. But I also know now that the relationship you and I are going to have will not be one-sided. It may seem that way, but it's not. Yes, of course, I do hope to help you grow as a human and evolve as a soul in any way I can, but I also know that you will be helping me to grow, because not only will you be giving me the opportunity to be of service, which is very important to me, but you will also be there to help remind me of what it is I believe and how strongly I believe it. So I have to tell you, without even knowing you, I already love that about you. And another thing I firmly believe is that the teacher is always the student. So know that I am also here to learn from you, because growth never stops for any of us. So I want to thank you ahead of time for helping me to be the best that I can be. And I'm so excited and honored to be a part of your life. Whether or not I ever meet you or speak with you, it doesn't matter. The fact that we're connected through this radio show is what's important. Having a relationship with you, however, is not the only reason I wanted to host this show. I really want to encourage you, support you, and hopefully convince you that you can make a difference in the world by making a difference in yourself. You are not as small as you think. You are important. You count. You matter. And you are a person of substance, otherwise you wouldn't be listening to this show. And within you is the same light that is within me. And I want to give you the opportunity to know your light and to let your light shine as brightly as it can. Because whether you believe it or not, you are a divine being. You are a human being for a very short period of time. But you are a divine being forever. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about on this show. That as human beings, most of us have forgotten that we're so much more than human. Oh, maybe somewhere in our psyche we know we have a soul someplace in there, but most people don't know what it does or what it feels like or what its purpose is. In fact, most people don't even think of themselves as a soul, so we kind of put that in our closet as well and forget about it. In fact, when I do book signings, I ask the audience, how many people think they have a soul? And 99% of the people raise their hands. But when I ask them, how many think they can communicate with their soul or that their soul can communicate with them? Only 20% raise their hands. So when I ask those people, well, if you know you have a soul, why do you think you have one? What does it do? What is its purpose? What good is it? And the reply is always the same. I don't know. I've never really thought about it. And I think a lot of us can identify with that. So I know that thinking about yourself as a magnificent light in this world, more magnificent than you can even imagine, may not be something you're familiar with or even feel comfortable with right now. But it's time we started thinking about it. It's time for us to start remembering who we really are, a soul first and a human second. I know there is still much resistance to the thought that we could be a divine being. And this became very evident to me when I went to a party a few years ago. It was a gathering where all of us were sitting around. Of course, the girls were on one side and the boys were on the other. I always laugh about that. Heaven forbid we mingle. And one of the women said to me, "So, Connie, how's your book coming along?" To which I replied, "Really good. I think I have about another 6 months before it's finished, and then it has to go to the publisher, so it'll be out next year." "That's great," she said. "What's your book about?" I said, "Well, it's about a lot of things, but if I had to put it into a few words, and I hate that elevator speech, I would say that it's about realizing that we are here in this lifetime to grow as a human and evolve as a soul, because we're both human and divine." And at that moment, one woman piped up immediately, and with her hands, she pretended to fan herself, and she said in this tone, "Oh, yes, I'm just so divine," to which everyone immediately gazed at me to see my reaction. I said nothing, but I thought to myself, wow, she is really uncomfortable with the thought that she could be something godlike or like God. And believe it or not, I get that. I was there once. I didn't know that at one time. For those of us who do believe in some kind of divine energy we call God, I know that sometimes it's much easier to think of ourselves as a child of God rather than think that we're actually a singular expression of God walking around as a human being dressed in a particular outfit. Because if we do go to the next step of believing that God really does live within us and God is who we really are, meaning that if God is the ocean, each of us is a wave, then that means we are a singular expression of God walking around. And if that is our truth, then that means that we're also going to have to believe that everyone else is also a singular expression of God walking around in different colors, diapers, dungarees, ballerina outfits, hairy chests, ski caps, thongs, rings in the noses, turbans, deep purple eyeshadow, tattered clothes, tattoos, and heavy gold necklaces. And if you believe that's true, then it means that God is also walking around carrying guns and grenades, wearing monk robes, hitting children in a grocery store, having his hand out on a street corner, cutting you off in traffic, leading a country, sitting in a church, a synagogue, a mosque, a gang, or in a dentist's office. No, it's not God doing the killing, the hitting, the driving, or the sitting. That's the human being. But God is in there somewhere, trying to get through to each and every one of us. So I get that too. I get that as a species, we're just not there yet with this kind of thinking. We'd rather believe there are exceptions, that God is inside some of us, but not all of us. I really do think we're getting there little by little, but I do believe that as long as we keep thinking that all our problems in the world are circumstances outside of us and out of our control, we're never going to get better, as indicated by what's going on in our own country and in the world. So what we're not realizing is that our problems in this world are really not political, economical, social, educational, or environmental. These are just the symptoms of the problem, like the symptoms lying on the floor around us when our closet door comes flying open. Our real problem is a spiritual one. It's a spiritual one because we've forgotten that we are one with each other. Instead, we continue to believe, like we have for thousands of years, that we're separate from one another, that my God is better than your God, that I am good and you are bad, that I'm okay and you're not and never will be. You see, those are the thoughts and feelings still left on the shelves of our own emotional closets that we project into the world because we're still not one with ourselves. That's the real cause of what's happening in the world. Therefore, we can't see the beautiful light in the far reaches of our closet. We can't feel the unconditional love that's there for us, so we can't feel it for another either. So this is by far what we have to change in our world if we're going to survive and live in peace. It's our belief in separateness that creates all our suffering. If we truly believed in our oneness, in fact, if only 1% of all the people in the world, 1%, were to live their truth of oneness, which would be about 70 million people, the world would completely change. So here's the thing. Once again, I repeat myself. Everything gets created from the inside out. The outside world is just a reflection, a mirror, of what's going on inside each and every one of us individually. So it's you that has to change. It's me that has to change. So if you want to help the efforts of lessening the idea of war, you must do something about the war you're having with yourself on a daily basis. If you want more peace in the world, you're going to have to find that peace somehow, some way, within you. If you want to do something about world hunger other than making donations, you're going to need to look within your emotional closet and see what it is that you're starving for. What is it that's missing in your life? What is so empty in you that needs to be filled, even if it's just a little thing? What is it? If you want to see a change in violence, you must make the effort to stop abusing yourself or another, whether it be through addiction, negative self-talk, or allowing others to treat you less than you treat yourself. And if you really want to start acting on feeling oneness with others, you must first start feeling connected to yourself in a loving way. Once you make the effort to diminish judgment within yourself, you are likely to stop judging others. And when that happens, even in the tiniest way, you are making a positive impact on the universal consciousness of our planet. So you see, dear one, my dear listener, you can make a difference in the world. In fact, it's the only thing that is going to make a difference in our world. One person can make a difference, because when you make a difference in yourself, others are affected by it. And sometimes by osmosis, they begin to make a change in themselves. Can you imagine what it would be like if 100 people began to make changes within themselves? Or what about 1,000 people? Or maybe hundreds of thousands? So here's what I'm proposing. The more you can consistently listen to this radio show, the more you're going to find something that works for you. You'll say, now that's something I can do without having to be in therapy for 30 years. Just start with only one thing and work on it, even if you only do that one thing for the rest of your life. And you will see the results. And then you will want to tell your children about it so that they can feel better about themselves. And then they'll pass it down to their children. And then before you know it, you will see that you may have affected 20 lives. And then those 20 more lives affect more lives. And the beat goes on. And before you know it, hundreds of people have been influenced by you without you even knowing it. And it could be only one thing you said that made an impression on someone. I mean, let's face it, if you think about it, I'm sure every one of you can come up with one thing that someone has said to you that has had an impact on your life, whether it was positive or negative, but it has stayed with you all this time. So this is what I mean. You can make a difference and have a positive impact in the world. This is how we change the world, one radio show at a time, by doing it one person at a time. And that's the main reason why I want to be the host of this radio show. I want to be one of those people in your life that believes in you and wants to help you remember how important you really are. But first, you're going to have to be important to yourself, and that's where I come in. My hand just went up. That's where I can help, because I can give you the tools you will need to start making a difference. You just have to make the commitment to listen. And that's what kicking it up a notch in life, love, and spirit is all about. It's about going to that next level within yourself. It's about elevating your awareness. It means making an effort to do better than you're currently doing. Kind of like changing gears in a car to pick up the pace. So when I talk about kicking it up a notch on this show, I'm talking about taking your life right where it is now and moving it up a level, improving it a little bit at a time, or a lot, depending on what you want and what you're ready for. It's not about 8 steps to a fulfilling life, because I haven't met anyone yet who's used the quick fix technique and have it work for any sustained period of time. Nope. Kicking it up a notch is more about believing in the process of your life and changing your negative thoughts, your outdated beliefs, your unwanted feelings, your insecurities, and basically making it a priority to work on yourself for the betterment of you, your children, and the world. And the way you do that is by practicing the little things we're going to be talking about on this program that can benefit your life tremendously. Kicking it up a notch is also about finding your life more exciting and spicy, even when it appears there's nothing to be excited about, or even when things get rough. It's about knowing how to do that, so you can realize that your happiness is a choice no matter what, and you have control over that happiness every single day of your life. So your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to tune into this show and just listen, or call in and ask a question, or have a conversation with me, or email me a question that's been on your mind. Just email me at drconnie@angelradionetwork.com. So tonight, I have a question that was emailed to me weeks ago. I feel very honored to receive this question, and also to answer it, because it takes tremendous courage to say, okay, Dr. Connie, I'm going to let you and everybody else see what's in my emotional closet, and I'd like some help with it. The good news about asking any kind of question on this show is that you don't have to reveal who you are if you don't want to. And that way, everything is kept confidential except the question. So here is this wonderful question for tonight. And if you continue to listen, I know you will benefit from it. Hi, Dr. Numbers. I am so excited for you, for all you are doing to bring light into the world. I do have a question you may wish to address on your radio show. I am wondering if we should let our future prospective spouse know so much about our self-destructive past. I certainly have one, I think because of very low self-esteem. And I'm afraid that if he would ever find out about any of it, he might not see me as marriage material. I'm ashamed of my past because I used to be physically abused. First of all, thank you so much for this question. It is a great question, and it's loaded with all kinds of good stuff to talk about. And just to let you know, my answer is a little lengthy because I believe it warrants it. So to the person who sent this question, don't worry about having to take notes or transcribe my response in any way, because I'm going to send you a copy of it. Now all you have to do is sit back and take it all in. So I will address your question about whether or not to tell a future spouse about your past a little bit later on, because we first have to address the most important issue at hand, and that is the shame that you are carrying around in the present from the past. It's important for us to talk about shame on this show because in some form or another, it resides in all of us somewhere. Shame is a feeling that has a voice. In fact, all of our feelings have a voice. But the voice of shame sounds like this. I'm not worthy. I'm defective. I'm not good enough. I made a huge mistake. I feel awful about myself. The difference, however, between the voice of shame and other feelings is that there is a sense of badness that comes with the feeling of shame. Not just feeling badly, but feeling bad. For example, you don't feel like you're a bad person if you feel hurt or angry or depressed about something. And in general, you wouldn't be afraid of telling a future spouse about those feelings. But when any of us feel shame, it feels like we're carrying around a badness that we can't get rid of. In your case, you fear that if your future prospective husband ever finds out about what is shameful within you, he might not want you, or at the very least, will see you as less than. So I am here to tell you, dear one, that there is nothing, and I mean nothing, bad or defective about you. You are a human being who makes mistakes like the rest of us. You are a human being who has experienced low self-esteem like the rest of us. And you're a human being who has regrets like the rest of us. So welcome to our club. In addition, however, you are also a beautiful, magnificent soul who's come to Earth this time around to experience the adventure of human life and all that comes with it. So you cannot possibly be less than in any way, because the Creator does not create defective. It's only your thoughts about yourself that create it, and that's what has to change. There's an excerpt in one of my letters in my book that I'd like to read to you, because I think it's exactly what you need to hear right now. I think you have my book, but if you don't, you may want to copy what I'm going to read to you and put it by your bedside or on the mirror or refrigerator as a reminder. And don't forget, this show is being archived, so you can always go back and listen to it as many times as you like. This paragraph is from the letter, "There's a Little Tarnish on Everybody's Halo, The Fear of Not Feeling Good Enough." And it goes like this. Dear one, know without a doubt that you did not come here to be perfect, nor does God expect perfection from you. Rather, you are meant to be in process. You are here to make mistakes. Blunders, blotches, and bungles are all part of growth. In fact, you cannot evolve without them. You are perfectly imperfect. Part of being human is accepting that everyone has issues, insecurities, and negativity. However, it is not the issues, insecurity, or negativity that cause the problem of you believing that you are not good enough. It is the judgments you carry about the issues, insecurities, and negativity that weigh you down. The more judgment you place on yourself for not being good enough, the heavier the burden you carry. And so, dear listener, this is what I see happening with you. You are carrying around a burden of shame that you no longer need. This feeling of shame has become the punishment you give yourself for the, quote, crime you think you committed by allowing yourself to be physically abused and choosing the wrong person. But there was no crime. There was just a choice that didn't serve you well. So it's time to let that go. And in order to do that, you have to stop abusing yourself by stopping self-judgment. This is key for you. Nothing is more important for you than that. In fact, nothing is more important than that for any of us. You fear that a future spouse will think less of you because you already think less of you. It's really as simple as that. Once again, everything works from the inside out. You are the one judging you, so you fear your future spouse or anyone else for that matter will do the same. So the issue is not really with a future spouse. The issue is with you, and that's the good news, because your growth and how you feel about yourself is in your control. So we can celebrate right now, because you can change your mind about you, and you can let go of your shame. In order to do this, I would suggest that you start using two of my favorite top 10 words of all time. And the first of these words is acceptance. Acceptance of who you were then and acceptance of who you are now. You see, my dear, there is no doubt in my mind that the reason all of us punish ourselves for making mistakes or choosing the wrong people in our life, or not doing the best we think we should have done in the past or whenever, is because we've forgotten that we really were doing the best we could at that moment with the understanding we had at that time. Let me say this again, and this goes out there for all those listening, and I know many people do not like hearing this, and I get that because at one time in my life, I also had a lot of resistance to this thought as well. But I have found in my life that it's true. Everyone does the best they can with the understanding they have at the time. Now, I'm not talking about an intellectual understanding. Each one of you listening now can look back at your life and say to yourself, I should have known better than that. I'm smart. I knew better. So what happened? Why did I screw up? And it's true, intellectually, we may have known better not to do something we knew we were probably going to regret. But I'm talking more about an emotional understanding. When we look back at our life with regret and wonder why we didn't do differently, it's because there was something within us emotionally that was sitting on a shelf in our closet that was holding us back from doing better, whether it be some kind of fear, like the fear of what others think, or low self-esteem, or acting out hurt or angry feelings. Or it could even be the child within us who keeps trying to get things right but rarely does. So the reason we don't do the best we think we could have done is because there's always something that lies unresolved within ourselves that keeps us from doing what would have been best for us. That's the emotional understanding I'm talking about. So when you think back at that time in your life, you need to know that you really were doing the best you could with the emotional understanding of where you were at that time. You know, all of us are different now than we were years ago. I'm a much different person than I was at the age of 5 or 15 or 25 or 35 or 45 or even 10 years ago at 55. And when I look back at my past, I see that at the age of, 25 or 35, even 45,